All right, heading into our first hour of open lines on Coast to Coast on this Thanksgiving weekend. George Norrie taking an extra night off. Coming up tomorrow night, the art of nonconformity. If you've been feeling constrained by our culture, it's time for you to break out. In fact, it would only benefit us if you did. The more people who are living outside the box, the greater the box will be expanded. I mean, inevitably, the box catches up with people, so we always have to be pushing outward. And when you start thinking outside the box, that's where real innovation lies. That's where our financial future lies. As a nation, you may have the next great invention. Could be cool. And the art of nonconformity will help you get there. Going back to what Howard Bloom talked about in that first hour, though, I believe that we do have a perception problem of what's going on right now. And I don't think it should be underestimated. You know, there was a time when in our culture, the zeitgeist, the German word for spirit times, or, you know, the prevailing spirit of our day, that the zeitgeist for the priesthood or for the clergy was very positive. And due to things which the clergy has done to itself over the years, the zeitgeist today on the clergy is actually negative. And I'm not saying that the media is to blame or that it's anybody's fault but our own, but even the Christian church itself is got problems, PR problems, and which at one time they scoffed at. They said, well, you know, statistically speaking, these incidents of, of improper behavior, illegal, immoral behavior by our leaders, it's very small percentage of the people that are involved in the leadership of the church. But over time, that small percentage ends up taking over the popular perception. And that's what I think it may be happening here with this TSA thing. I think the TSA is not in line with what our experience is. President Obama defended the TSA today in these ridiculous procedures, which don't actually make us safer. I don't believe they make us safer anyway. I don't feel safer because somebody who's flying from Tulsa, you know, to Albany, Georgia. I don't believe that we're safer because that 87-year-old grandmother who's going to go visit her grandchildren got a body scan. I just don't believe it. And when they do start finding then these, you know, bombs that are put in body cavities, what does that mean for the rest of us? How will we be affected by that then? Just how much more humiliation will we have to go through in order to keep the engine of our economy running by flying around the country? Maybe an entire industry could go down if people say enough. And that seems inconceivable from where we stand. But if you actually look at the story arc of history, it's happened a lot. So I just throw that out there, whether that's been your experience or not on security, don't know. Don't know where you want to go with this show, but it's open line, so it's up to you next. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. All right, open lines means that the show is up to you. From this point forward, we start first-time caller line. Joe is in Pennsylvania on Coast to Coast. Joe?
Hello, Ian. This is such an honor. Thank you for taking my call. It's better than winning tickets to the Super Bowl or something.
That's so a lie. That is such a lie. Don't ever take this over tickets to the Super Bowl, dude. Take the Super Bowl tickets and call me and we'll go together, okay?
This is my 5 seconds of fame here. Listen, okay. I found it interesting. You're talking to David Bloom. You read from the article in the Israeli paper. For a long time, I've had this feeling with all that's been going on in America and all the controversies from every direction since 9/11, that we need to be more like the Israeli people. That sense of protecting our own borders, the American populace needs to wake up. You know, I know there's many who say that the Israeli government has declined, the might of the Israeli army has lost some of its pizzazz or strength, but I still think that they have a sense of national identity, and I think we've lost that. Governments run amok, so in this country, and.
Well, you know, that's interesting. I mean, certainly when you look at Israel, they are surrounded, just like we are feeling like we're surrounded with people
exactly.
That want to tear us down. So they're a good model for that. And they do something which I think we don't do as well, and we need to. And that's depend not on technology, but on human intelligence to know what's coming up, what's going to be happening to us. And we are too technocentric, I think, in our response to terrorism or to threats. And that's where the Israelis, I think, really kind of are showing us up a little bit. Because look, for all the years that people have been trying to blow up Israel and take down Israel, they do an amazing job keeping themselves safe, I think.
I'm in complete agreement. I wanted to ask you to also, if you would, and I'll listen for your comment off the air, what did you think about the elections on November 2nd? Did you see that as some kind of awakening here, since we're talking about cultural perceptions and awakening?
Well, it's a perception of awakening the more people say that it is, and it will remain that way until the majority of people say that it's not. So was it an awakening then? Was it an awakening 2 years to the date earlier when President Obama was elected and there was a big Democratic rush? Was that an awakening? I try not to think in terms of awakeness and sleepness. These are terms that go back a long way. In fact, I'm preaching this Sunday, and that idea of awake and sleep and everything is part of the strong religious tradition. I just think it's misapplied most of the time. I think if you look at the Republicans had control for things for a long time and mismanaged that, in my opinion, blew huge opportunities. Getting a second bite at the apple, is it an awakening for them on how to do it better this time? I hope so. And that they won't continue to spend money at the same rate they were spending it before. And they weren't continuing to become what they had mocked by the way that they were, their spendthrift ways. I hope so. I mean, we need to spend smart money now. And however we do that, however we decide as a nation to do it, we got to be open to that. And I hope that our leaders get that done. West of the Rockies, Pam is in El Cajon, California. Hey, Pam.
Hi, Ian. Hey, why was that guy in bed for 15 years? And do you know Harold Camping and Family Radio?
I don't know him, but I will tell you about Howard Bloom, whom I do know, and that's that he had a condition. It was not agoraphobia, which is what a lot of people had said that it was. He had a condition which prevented him, his physical energy, his mental energy, a malaise. It wasn't depression, but he was confined to his bed. It was the only place he wanted to be for years, and he sought treatment and over a period of time had been able to get about, first the neighborhood, now, as you heard him say, the world. And by the way, too, previous caller referred to him as David Bloom. That sadly was the name of that NBC reporter, right, who had been killed in Iraq. He had died of an embolism, wasn't it? Confined to a small space. David Bloom was a fairly big guy. He'd been a hockey player in high school and college, and he was a fairly big guy, confined to a small place, and had suffered from a blood clot, I think, from that cramped space. Is very much like, you know, authorities were telling us to always be mindful of when we get on planes. Doctors will say this, drink a lot of water when you're getting on, if you're going to be traveling, because you tend to be in a cramped space for a long period of time, and you could develop something that could lead to a pulmonary embolism. If I've got that right. So, or whatever kind the response is, it's bad for you. You got to drink a lot of water. Well, then did you see the story earlier this week where a passenger had been flagged by the other passengers on a plane because he was getting up and going to the bathroom too much, that he looked nervous and he had to keep going to the bathroom. And so it ended up involving the security. And I thought, in a way, nothing had happened. He had no explosives. He just had to he had to pee. You know, brother had to pee. I mean, he kept drinking the water like he's supposed to, and he had to keep going to the bathroom. Like sometimes, you know, on these security things, you can't win for trying. Barry is in Osaka, Japan, and joins us on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Barry?
Ian, how you doing? Nice to talk to you.
And to you.
Yeah. Well, been a long time listener, first time calling, I got right through.
Glad to hear it. Well, you called just before the top of the hour, and that's just the way to do it. Just before we give the numbers is always your best chance to get on. So good job on that.
Yeah, I've got a story to share with you about some intuition I had, but unfortunately, it was a bit of a sad story for a lot of people.
Tell me about
this
that.
This goes back to when I was younger. Now, as you already know, I'm living in Osaka, Japan. I grew up just outside of Toronto in a place called Mississauga, but I was born in England. And in 1985, we decided, my grandparents in England, this was June 1985. We were going to leave June 23rd, 1985 from Pearson Airport in Toronto. And just so you know, I have absolutely no fear of flying. I never have, never will. And for about a week running before we left, I kept having the dream of a plane crashing over and over and over again. I thought nothing of it. Me and my family went to the airport. And as we were pulling off the highway, I looked to the airport. And at the airport, I saw 747. This 747 was an Air India 747. The date was June 23rd, 1985. That Air India was Air India Flight 182. About 7 hours later, it exploded over the Atlantic with a bomb on board, killing everybody. Hmm. It's not a happy story, but it impacted me.
Is that the only time you've had that?
No. I've had gut feelings lots of times, but this is the one that's like, wow.
Well, that was that graphic, and that's what I mean, where something was that clear, where it just pulled it out for you.
The departure gate, it was in the departure gate next to us. It took off on the runway before us, and my younger brother, you remember seeing the passengers to this day.
I bet. Yeah, and that must be kind of a ghost-like image in his memory of seeing those faces of those innocent people just getting on a plane like anybody else, not having any idea what their future was going to be like.
Yeah. Looking over, seeing the 747 at the gate as we're pulling into the airport sticks in my mind because at the time I just thought nothing about it.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. Thanks, Barry. That's very interesting. Glad you got through and glad you're listening all the way in Japan. Robert is in Oklahoma City on a wild card line, too, on Coast to Coast. Robert?
Hey, good morning. I just want to make a quote by Benjamin Franklin. He said that a people who trade freedom for security will get neither.
Sure. I mean, we live that. I mean, that quote is everywhere these days, and it's exactly how we should be thinking, which is, what are we giving up, and what are we getting for it in return? Everything in life is a trade-off. Everything you've done today, Robert, you've traded off one thing for something else. I think we're all good for that. But the deal has to be that if we're trading off our freedoms, we have to be getting some sort of symmetrical security in return. And if we're not even getting that, if we're trading off our freedoms for nothing, for air, for mist, if we're not actually more secure for trading off those freedoms, then what fools are we?
Yeah, I agree.
All right, thank you. Appreciate that. Let's go to, George is in Indianapolis on Coast to Coast on a wild card line. George?
Hi. I'm a longtime listener, and I just have to weigh in on this TSA pat-down business at the airports.
Okay.
I wear a colostomy bag.
Oh.
Not a urostomy, a colostomy. And I would just love for one of those TSA agents to open it.
Yeah. Boy, thank you, first of all, for your candor on that. And you are referring, for people who don't know, to, I believe it was the elderly 67-year-old guy from Detroit or something. And
urine. Well, mine is full of feces.
Right.
Due to having part of my colon removed.
Sure. And so
I'm with it for life. I'm a relatively young man. I'm only 55. And I will have it until I die. And I would just love for someone to, you know, say, hey, maybe there's explosives in there.
Right. And thank you, George. Yeah, right. They're bombs of a different sort, I suppose. But, yeah, you know what? And this poor guy, for people who don't know the story, in Detroit, he was telling the people, do not disconnect this. It's going to cause a problem. They had to make sure that the urostomy bag wasn't filled with plastic explosives or with liquid explosives, nitroglycerin or whatever. And of course the poor man had urine then all over him. And does that make us safer? I don't think so. I mean, it's appalling in that way. And of course, the TSA comes on and says, this is an aberration. You start adding up the aberrations, that becomes a pattern. Hale is in Greensburg, Indiana, open line, wild card line on Coast to Coast. Hale?
Yes, Ian. Again, I'm a first-time caller, and I'm happy to be able to get on your show. I just wanted to relay an experience that I had. I just flew back from Fort Myers, Florida, and my wife was with me. I had an artificial knee, and so they checked me and scanned me and then patted me down completely, and it was done by a male. I didn't object to it, but on the other hand, my wife, they just ran her through without really doing anything. Now, she could have had a ton of explosives with her,
sure,
and nothing was even looked at. So,
does that mean that you look shiftier than your wife does, Hale?
Well, I'm guessing that I must have, Ian.
Yeah, you must put something in your eyes or something.
I guess so. There must have been some reason for it there. But I just wanted to relate that.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that could be done, and my thinking is people should make their arrangements far enough in advance. And if the government really wants to get into this, let them do background checks.
Yeah.
Make sure that there are background checks on people before they're able to even approach the airport to fly.
Hey, Dale, when they were doing the pat-down, did they have gloves on?
Beg your pardon?
When they were doing your pat-down, did they have gloves on?
Yes. Yes,
okay.
They did.
But here's what I've...
They were very thorough.
You know what? The story is on those gloves. This is what I'm told by a reporter for 5 Eyewitness News here in town. It's probably everybody knows this, but I'll just tell you anyway, for those people who don't, that the gloves that they use, the TSA gloves, actually are treated on the outside with a chemical which would pick up any sort of explosive residue. So when they're going up into your crotchal area, when they're padding around, they may not actually be feeling for anything so much as just getting into your most intimate spaces in thinking that there will be bomb residue that will show up on the gloves. After they're done with you, then they put those gloves, if I understand the procedures correctly, then those gloves are examined under a light and or some sort of detector. And they're able to tell whether or not there's some sort of residue there on that. That's what that's all about. And that's why they are using that procedure, too, where they push with their thumbs until it meets resistance in your crotch. And they go up until it meets resistance. And this has meant that women who have incontinence pads, like a poise pad, they've had that pushed on, examined, questioned by the TSA agent. And they just simply say, well, that's my, after they explain, that's my incontinence pad, then they may or may not be let off at that point. But what's to say then that the bombers, if they're going to do that, aren't going to put gel bombs in these poise pads? I mean, how does that actually, again, make us safe? I don't know. And then, of course, this story I'll tell you in just a minute of a woman I spoke with about what a 13-year-old girl had to go through, going through airport security. That, I think, will change your perception, perhaps just a little bit, of whether or not this is actually making us safer. And what can we do to make ourselves safer? That is also another question. What else should we be doing? Which is maybe the subtext of this whole conversation. On Coast to Coast, in for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. All right, so we're lining up your open line calls on Coast to Coast. We'll get to you throughout the night. Be patient if you can't get through, although I think there's one open line just opened up on a wild card line. Try that one. And in the meantime, too, take a look on what's coming up tomorrow, the art of nonconformity. If you've been finding yourself wondering whether coming up in 2011 there needs to be a new direction for you, I know just the guy who can help. You can realize your real dream of being who you really are and doing what you really think you ought to do, even if it doesn't make any sense to anybody else. Coming up tomorrow night, we'll get started on Coast to Coast. In the meantime, where are you going to take the show? We'll find out next. This is Ian Punnett. All right, let's do East of the Rockies. Jeff is in Mizzou on Coast to Coast. Jeff?
Hello, how's it going tonight?
Good, open lines. Go ahead.
First, did you get my video on the day after interview?
I did not. I don't know what you mean.
I sent you an old video interview from YouTube. A video posted on YouTube of an old day after interview.
Oh, okay. From Nicholas Meyer?
I don't remember who it was.
Okay, yeah. Now I'm having a flashback memory to this. And you put it on. Did you put it on my Facebook page?
No, I sent it to your Coast email.
Okay, I may not have gotten it. That Coast box has gotten so clogged up, and so I have to be honest with you, I don't get in there very often, and other people find ways to get things to me, and I do poke in there. Okay.
That was done during the day after that was being
good.
Made.
Well, I'm glad.
I'll find it again then, send it to your Facebook. But
that'll be good. Thank you.
I wanted to comment real quick and on two things: the TSA and the North Korean thing.
Yeah.
The first thing with the TSA, I'm not a big fan of these new procedures. However, flying is a privilege and not a right. If you don't like the rules, you don't have to fly.
Well, stop right there. I'm good with that. I think you're right, and we should look at it like that. Except the rules have to make sense.
Oh yeah,
and
true
so
too.
I mean, we could say, look, driving's a privilege; it's not a right. That's why every three blocks you got to get out of your car. If you don't like it, don't drive.
Yeah, every, that's true too. But
we're going to set up checkpoints all over town, and every time you get on a highway, you got to stop and it's a security checkpoint. If you don't want to, you got to. And the only reason I say that to you is because at the same time, we know how much our economy depends on frequent air travel.
Oh yeah, I realize that too. But there's also that other aspect, like I mentioned.
Well, okay, but if we take that piece out, if we suddenly make travel harder and we make people less, you know, likely to fly, and we're doing it for any productive reason other than it's good security theater. If we do that, then we're also hurting our economy at a time when we needed to expand.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't like it. I don't like these new procedures, like I said in the beginning. And I don't think Israel is a good place to start, but Israel doesn't have 300 million people in their country either. So,
well, I think that's fair, but not 300 million people flying every day. So let's in the real terms that we have to work with, I think more would get done when instead of being technocentric and trying to always find some device or some gimmick, we really need to rely on human intel. It's a failure.
Oh, yeah,
we had it. It's a failure. We had it 9/11. We're using satellites and listening devices.
People were afraid to get their hands dirty.
Right. Instead of having boots on the ground. And I don't think that what we're doing is tantamount to that. And I think we could do more with bomb sniffing dogs. They can pick up more from 2 feet away than these devices would be detecting anyway. The guy who invented the scanner, the body scanning device, says it would not have found the underwear bomb.
And I found something a little on my final note on this subject real quick. You know who's a primary investor in the company that's installing the scanners?
No, who's that?
George Soros.
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me.
Oh, yeah. I just found that an interesting coincidence.
Right. And I think, right, at least as it stands right now, yeah, George Soros being the primary, you know, financier behind MoveOn.org and all sorts of liberal causes, as well as Democratic, you know, candidates across the country. In a way, he's probably in there with Rupert Murdoch. They're probably both investors in these. I mean, this is, you know, money's going to not know politics on this. And people are going to look at this and they're going to say, well, this is a future. We're going to have more of these in the future. Why not invest? But yeah, Soros. Yeah, doesn't surprise me. I think there's a lot of people who are on the conservative side and the liberal side who are saying this is over. This should not be happening. This is a violation of our freedom that gives us no measurable safety improvement in return. At least that's my opinion. Randy is in Pasadena, California, first time caller on Coast to Coast. Randy?
Hi, Ian. I called up to talk about what George Norrie, on his show at the beginning of Coast to Coast, there was a lady that talked about India. I don't know if you've heard about this new identification that all the people, the entire population of India is going to be getting. And she was telling the people and the listeners that, warning them that could be the beginning of a sign of the mark of the beast. And I just wanted to say something to the listeners. You know, the mark of the beast is not, and I don't know what you believe. I know you're a minister, but no one's going to see the mark of the beast at all. The more people that say they believe in God and they have these views of the beast, the more they look at the world and they keep saying, "Oh, this is the beast, that's the beast." And I just wanted to say for the clear the conscience for eternal life and speak up for that, because it's not going to be seen. Did you hear what she was saying last
No,
night?
But that doesn't surprise me. I've heard that argument made a lot, that anytime we are, I mean, originally Social Security numbers were the mark of the beast.
Yeah.
Right there. That we had a number from the government, and I read a whole treatise from 1954 or whatever it was. I don't think it was the John Birch Society, but it was something like that. And it made the claim back then that Social Security numbers were the mark of the beast. Well, I mean, driver's license numbers could be the mark of the beast, I guess, if we're going to look at it at that way. But yeah. Go ahead real quick.
Yeah. Oh, I just wanted to say that the closest thing that would give any kind of insight to what the mark of the beast means, that back in the old days, the priest used to wear the commandments, the laws on their forehead and the laws on their wrist. And that's probably the closest representation of receiving the law, because the law concerns the purchase of the life. And it says that they'll receive the mark. It doesn't say that there's going to be somebody stamping their hand. Receiving, it's like when the Son of Man said, "Receive. If you've seen me, then you've seen God, or you've seen the life." Right.
I think the claim is, Randy, just to be clear, is that if in order to do commerce, you would need to have the mark of the beast. That's the claim. That when the evil empire rises, when the empire of those that are antichrist rise, that you would need to have the mark of the beast in order to function within society. That actually, I believe, was referring to something that had already happened, not something that was still yet to happen, because if we look at it that way, honestly, think of all the numbers you have to have in order to do commerce, generally speaking, in the United States alone, not to mention the world. Your passport is, in a way, the mark of the beast. If you can't do you can't fly and do business without having that kind of a number. Robin is in Ontario, Canada, international caller on Coast to Coast. Robin?
Dan, how are you this evening?
Good. Where are you going to take us?
I'm going to take us somewhere. I'm wondering, here in Ontario, well, right now it's kind of cold. I'm sitting outside in my garage. We're getting our first snow of the year. And I'm a bit of an out-of-the-box thinker. I'm sitting here, I grab my phone, and I realize that I can't text on my home phone. Why is that? I'm an out-of-the-box thinker and try to figure out how to fix what's wrong. And
because
I can't text on my home phone. I just really want to put that out there.
You can, I believe, I could be wrong on this, but you'd have to be able to jump the message that you would put on your phone, you would have to be able to jump that on a website or an app in order to be able to transfer it to the cellular conveyance of digital
information.
Well, I guess
what I'm trying to say is it's something I can't fix. And this is a system, like I can grab my iPhone. I know that you really appreciate technology and you use your iPad and, you know, find different ways to use it. So why is it I can't grab my home phone and text the way I do on my iPhone, or my home phone and text the way I do on my iPhone?
Well, because that's a cellular technology. Yeah. I mean, since your iPhone is, your home phone, rather, is a landline. It's just a different system. But you can do it if you would interface your phone with the proper translator that would then turn it into cellular signal that would reach out to somebody.
I had my thoughts a lot better organized before and while I was waiting, and it's funny it came out this way. But I want to put it out there and put it into somebody else's mind because I can't
think. Okay.
And if somebody could bring me a cordless home phone that I could sit and type a message out and then send it through my home phone online and get to those other phones, I would really appreciate it. Somebody out there, please help me.
Okay, well, good. And you could always try Googling that, too. I don't know if you've heard about this. I think it's kind of cool. This is a new app that's out for at least for smartphones. And it's fairly brilliant. If you know somebody's phone book in their, you know, in their address book in their cell phone, where you can look up other people's phone numbers, you can use an app that's called, there's an app where you can you go through the app with somebody else's phone, and you can make it appear as though anybody is calling that person that's in their cell phone. So if you know the numbers, you could from your own cell phone, you could give the appearance, you know, that somebody else is calling. You can use a third party line essentially by jumping like that. And it just goes to show you that you know, the application was used mostly for pranks by people. Like my older son pulled a prank on my younger son by using that app. And it was very funny because my son thought somebody else was calling him other than obviously his brother. And he was all excited about the person that was calling him. But then it's also been used in that story back. Did you hear that story on Halloween night where a girl was terrorized by her quote unquote friends by somebody was calling her cell phone and it registered on her cell phone as the house? That so she was in her house and her house was calling her, and the claim was that somebody was in the house. They're giving her the impression that somebody was calling from her home and said, "I'm here, I'm in the house." And obviously she believed it because it said home on her caller ID. So just, you know, the new apps coming all the time. Who knows what'll happen next? Jameson is in Denver, Colorado on Coast to Coast. Jameson?
Yes. Hello, America. Hello, Ian. Thank you for taking my call. And wanted to say I look forward to your show tomorrow. I like that little bit you had about inspiration and thinking out of the box. I was born in the state of New Hampshire where the motto is live free or die. So I've always been thinking out of the box. It's always been on my mind.
Good.
I wanted to mention a whole lot of things. Talking about the TSA, that's just a ploy, you know, a New World Order ploy to have us distracted, all this compartmentalization for this agency. You know, then you're on to the next group and the next group and the next group. We need to dismantle this huge national government that we have, the agencies that are controlling the terror. It's the CIA, it's the Mossad who could be claimed are responsible for 9/11. There's a lot of evidence that even shows these people that are quote-unquote Americans born in this country are disloyal to America. They could give a hoot about the Constitution. They could give a, you know, hoot about nationalism, and yet they play us against each other based on nationalism, based on our red, white, and blue pride, and we're going to war on a bunch of lies. And it's terrible. You can look at even the bombings in London, the buses being implosions, not explosions, as though the bombs were placed under the buses. British MI6 could be involved. All this stuff, I believe I'm on the right basis.
Jameson, we're not doing that. You know, just because I picked up the phone, it doesn't mean you get to go until you run out of things to say. I have a question for you. Do you not believe that there are terrorists?
I believe that in the 70s, there were Al-Qaeda terrorist camps in Saudi Arabia trained by the CIA. This is what I'm getting at. I'd like to tell you the story. I think you would find it fascinating. It's a personal narrative of mine because I'm so adamant against this, about this, on the internet, talking about it, etc.
How long will it take?
I'm linking people to videos. I actually spoke to a general that's in charge of the NORAD radar command in the northeast somewhere where I was born. He's friends with my stepdad.
Okay.
Said he was supporting Giuliani for president. I said, that Jesuit, F that guy. He sent us.
Okay, I'm not going to do F that. I'm not doing that. So we're done. I, Jameson, it just sounds like a big ramble at this point, and that's not what Open Lines is. It's about. It's not about you grabbing the wheel and driving until you run out of gas. So if you want to have a conversation, great to have you. But I don't, you say that there was only CIA trained terrorists. I think we have plenty of evidence that there is also terrorism. I don't believe the Israelis bombed 9/11. That's my opinion. I believe I can pretty much prove that. But there are lots of CIA things going on. We love talking about them on Coast to Coast, but I don't believe the CIA is responsible for everything. And I do believe there are terrorists out there and that they want nothing more than just to bring us down. But you are welcome to your opinion. Ted is in Lexington, Massachusetts on Coast to Coast. Ted?
Good morning, good afternoon, or whatever the time zone you're in.
Good point.
Because obviously people are global nowadays. You could be in the middle of the Pacific somewhere on an island listening to it.
To Barry in Osaka, Japan, for example, who called earlier. Exactly.
Yes, I was in Singapore a few weeks ago, so it was middle of the afternoon when it was middle of the night for people I was trying to call. The thing that we have now, which we've really think we invented, is globalism. And, of course, we have this as a model based on the Roman Empire. In the Roman Empire time, of course, the globe was somewhat smaller because of the speed you could travel and things. But basically, you could go from one side of the empire to the other and use the same currency. In fact, you could use even checks to write checks in Spain and have them cashed in Jerusalem, for instance, or something like that. It was all based on trust, and it permitted you to travel from one side of the empire to the other to execute contracts and things of this nature and to use the technology of the empire. Once that trust broke, we had the Dark Ages because people couldn't live in Rome anymore because the food couldn't get there because it was delivered by water predominantly, and it depended on the ability to have a check or a bank transaction done in Egypt for grain that was going to be delivered to a small quay someplace or other for a bakery in Rome.
Well, it's a fair point that we've had lots of historic models for globalism, even, the Knights Templar, and just even that one minor example of protecting the roads for international travel between, all the way from England or whatever, all the way to the Holy Land. Yep. Yeah, we are in a new age in terms of the speed of our globalism and the amount of information that can be transferred at these distances and how interconnected we can remain constantly. That's for sure. But yeah, globalism has always been there. Question is what's the role of nationalism versus globalism too? It's Coast to Coast. More open lines coming up next. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett.